I was counting fast. The members, please indicate their presence by voting. The clerk, please tally the board.
22 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Leading the invocation today is Reverend Leon Thompson of Chapel by the Lake. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
As we begin this new day, please join me in prayer. Dear God, we are grateful and thankful for life and the lives you have given each of us. We've been given breath and movement, gifts and talents, abilities and tasks. This day, may we step up to the challenges that come before each of us. In our conversations and in our deliberations, give us kind and a loving spirit. Give us the ability to stand firm on the issues that are at times tough and almost always controversial. When this day is complete, may we look back upon it and be able to say with a clear conscience, well done. Help us to act with courage and wisdom. Where there is need to listen, give us ears to hear. Where there is need to see, give us vision that is clear. Where there is need to speak, give us courage to proclaim the truth as we perceive it. Where there are issues of justice, let us stand boldly. Where there is need to confront, let us do it with a spirit of love, yet not compromising our strong convictions. O God, may all the legislators in the House and Senate work for the good of all the people in this great land we call Alaska. We give thanks for their commitment of time, energy, and service. Surround us this day with your presence and help us to continually call upon your direction, strength, and wisdom in all that we do. We commit this day to you and give praise to you for all you have done from the beginning of time. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Reverend Thompson. Representative Green, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representative Bryce has previously been excused from a call of the House today.
Representative Bryce will be shown as excused. Clerk, please certify the journal for the previous legislative day.
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 43rd legislative.
The House is in order. Madam Clerk.
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 43rd legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journal as certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the journal will stand approved. Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Jewell.
Yes, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery, three of my constituents from the North Slope Borough School District. First is Tina Corwin. And the, if you'd stand. And Ben Nagak is the, is a board member, but also a member of the State Board of Education and the superintendent of the district, Leland Dishman. Would you help me welcome them, please?
Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also have school board members from the Lower Kuskokwim School District in the Taylor Gallery that I would like to present to this body. Max Angelin from Kuikluk, Roland Lewis from Kuikluk, and Richard Curtis from Tuxik Bay. Please help me welcome the gentleman.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery, we have someone who, if you're from Fairbanks, is certainly well known to you. She's been on the City Council and the Borough Assembly. Currently, she's on the State Advisory Board for Alcohol and Drug Abuse. Would you please welcome Ms. Valerie Therrien?
Representative Foster.
Yes, ma'am. In the gallery behind me, I've got Gil Gutierrez on his first term of the Nome School Board. And also a dear friend of mine that I've known for many years, Mike Murphy, on the Nome School Board, and I'd like to add that he's not only a respected policeman in Nome, but also one of the most popular people in Nome. If you'll please help me welcome them to Juno.
Further guests, Representative Nicolai.
Good morning, Madam Speaker. I too have guests from the Yukon River, from the community of Galena. Would you stand, please, in the Paratrovich Gallery, Gary Burgett, John Billings, and Marvin Yoder. Please join me in welcoming them to Juno.
Further guests? This brings us down the calendar to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
A message dated February 24th transmitting Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5 by Senate Rules Committee authorizing a recess by the Senate and the House of Representatives for a period of more than 3 days.
That will be referred to the Rules Calendar or Rules Committee for placement on the calendar.
I have no further messages from the other body, Madam Speaker.
Do we have reports of standing committees or do we have communications?
We received from the Department of Environmental Conservation, Spill Prevention and Response Division, the Storage Tank Assistance Fund annual report. I have no further communications, Madam Speaker.
Do we have reports of standing committees?
The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 55, Alaska Railroad Budget and Land, recommending it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 55, Transportation, with the new title. Fiscal notes are forthcoming. Recommending do pass Sanders, Calderie, do not pass Hudson and Elton. No recommendation Massick and Williams. The report was signed by Williams Chair, House Bill 55, as a further referral to the State Affairs Committee. The Finance Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 69, Rafinella, Schedule IVA drug. Recommending do pass Terry O'Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, Kelly, and Foster. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 69 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 86, Cities, Payments in Lieu of Taxes, recommending do pass Mulder, Davies, Moses, Foster. No recommendation. Terrio, Hanley, Martin, Coring, Grusendorf, and Kelly. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. House Bill 86 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Do we have reports of special committees?
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered House Joint Resolution Number 23, sale of LTD entry permits by IRS, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Osterman, Cabina, Hodgins, and Ogun. The report was signed by Osterman Chair. House Joint Resolution 23 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered House Bill 123, Tax Obligation Loan Program, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Osterman, Hodgins, Cabina, and Ogun. The report was signed by Osterman Chair. House Bill 123 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. I have no further special committee reports.
Do we have citations or resolutions today for introduction?
Citation honoring Leah Jarvis by Representative Cabina. Honoring the many volunteers and workers who created the garden at Four Corners by Representative Rokeberg. Honoring Dr. Jerry Prevost on his 25th anniversary by Representative Ryan. House Resolution Number 7 by the House Rules Committee establishing a House Special Committee on Telecommunications.
That will be referred to the Rules Committee for placement on the calendar.
I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
I'll stand at ease. Do we have bills today for introduction?
Yes, Madam Speaker. House Bill 157 by Representative James, entitled An Act Repealing Statutes That Condition Receipt of Certain Occupational Licenses on Compliance with Student Loan Repayment Provisions and Compliance with Support Orders or Payment Schedules Related to Support Orders.
That'll be referred to the HES Committee and the Labor and Commerce Committee.
House Bill 158 by Representative Dyson, entitled An Act Relating to Attendance at a Public School on a Part-Time Basis.
And be referred to the HES Committee and Finance Committee.
House Bill 159 by Representative Cott, entitled An Act Relating to Sale, Possession, and Purchase of Tobacco and Tobacco Products, Amending Rules 603 and 611D, Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure, and Providing for an Effective Date.
That will be referred to Labor and Commerce and Judiciary.
House Bill 160 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, entitled An Act Relating to Legislative Ethics Relating to the Filing of Disclosures by Certain Legislative Employees and Officials, and Providing for an Effective Date.
That will be referred to the Legislative Council and the Rules Committees. Mr. Minority Leader? I'll stand at ease.
61 by Representative James, entitled An Act Relating to Deregulation of Public Utilities Furnishing Collection and Disposal Service of Waste Material.
That will be referred to the Labor and Commerce Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Madam Speaker.
This brings us down the calendar to consideration of the daily calendar. Clerk, please, Mr. Minority Leader.
Can I have a brief at ease?
House stand at ease. Representative Ivan.
Speaker, ask permission to revert back to introduction of guests, please.
Without objection.
Thank you. I also have constituents in the Paradovich Gallery from the Southwest Region School District. We have Nick Johnson from Dillingham and Don Evans, the superintendent of schools for the Southwest Region School District. Please help me welcome those.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 22 by Representatives Ivan, Porter, and Berkowitz, entitled An Act Relating to Civil Liability for Illegal Sales of Alcoholic Beverages and Providing for an Effective Date. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 22 Judiciary with the new title, attached 3-0 fiscal notes, recommending do pass Croft, Rokeberg, Porter, Green, Bundy, James, Berkowitz. The report was signed by Green Chairman. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the House Judiciary Committee substitute for HB 22 with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the committee substitute will be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent then that the committee substitute for HB 22 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
Committee Substitute for House Bill 22 Judiciary by the House Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Civil Liability for Illegal Sale or Barter of an Alcoholic Beverage or a Controlled Substance and Providing for an Effective Date.
Under debate, Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The legislation before us is very simple. It applies strict liability to a bootlegger or drug dealer for any actions of a buyer of illegal alcohol or drugs that may result in civil damages to another person, the state, or political subdivisions of the state. Should the buyer, while under the influence of the illegally purchased substance or alcohol, commit a criminal offense, the bootlegger or drug dealer will also be responsible for the cost of the prosecution. Madam Speaker, throughout the state, there have been those selling drugs or illegal alcohol who have gained financially, with little recourse by an individual or the state accepting criminal prosecutions. This bill places another burden on those who attempt to profit illegally. Current law seemingly exempts bootleggers and drug dealers from any civil liability for the damage that may be caused by those who are under the influence of the bootleg booze or illegal drugs. This bill will rectify that. Madam Speaker, I ask for your support in passing this legislation before us today. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would first, I think, speaking for the Judiciary Committee, I'd like to apologize and thank the sponsor of this bill for what the Judiciary Committee thought would be good ideas, and they've turned out to be very good ideas, but he brought a very simple bill to the committee, and we added these great thoughts that we had. It took us quite a while and some degree of concern that it was ever going to happen, but we did make what I think and members of the committee think is a very good bill. Adding to that to the original idea of making a bootlegger civilly responsible for the acts of those people who are subsequently committing violations because of their intoxication from that liquor, adding to that the ability of the state to add prosecution costs for those people to the bootlegger civilly, making him civilly responsible. And then having that whole concept apply to those who sell illegal controlled substances also. So I would offer my request to the members to support this legislation also.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I'd also like to thank the sponsor of the bill for his indulgence in making a tortured idea into a bill here. I rise in support of the bill because we're in a position here where we can make crime expensive. All too long, crime pays. And this is one way of making drug dealers and bootleggers bear the responsibility and the social cost for what they do. And I urge my colleagues here to support, and I think a unanimous vote would send a strong message. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask a question of the sponsors, probably the representative from District 13. My question is, under the civil damages, if the bootlegger supplied alcohol to a pregnant woman and the result was a fetal alcohol syndrome for the child, would you anticipate that there'd be a basis for a civil action?
Well, I used to think of him as my friend from...
Representative Berkowitz, you have not been recognized. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That particular fact situation was not considered at the committee level. My off-the-top-of-my headache reaction to it is that it would be an interesting theory. I don't think that out of hand it would be precluded, but there probably would be a considerable amount of evidentiary requirement.
Further debate? You ready for the Representative Ogun?
Madam Speaker, I have some questions for the sponsors. Is there other states that have this type of legislation that we're modeled after or other examples? I mean, I think we're really, you know, I support the principle here, but, you know, we're really taking a major departure in policy in the state to hold people responsible for other people's actions. I'd just like to hear if we're breaking new ground here, or if this is done in other states, and the constitutionality questions of it.
Representative Ivan.
Ask for IDs, please.
House stand at ease. Order. Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. For that last question and response, I would like to yield to my colleague from North Pole to respond to the question.
Representative Veazey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In response to that question, four states have currently enacted laws establishing liability for drug dealers. I am not aware if these laws also address illegal alcohol sales, but... there are a number of other states, at least four that I'm aware of, that are in this current legislative year are considering legislation. So the answer to your question is that we're not really plowing new ground, but all the constitutional challenges to this law have obviously not made their way through the courts. There certainly will be, but it really gets back to issues that are very similar to our federal RICO laws, which is the Racketeering and Influence Corrupt Officials Act or something like that. And those laws have been to the Supreme Court, and for the most part, they have been upheld.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Barnes.
I'll have to finish with the question because I want to introduce a guest.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 22?
Madam Speaker, may we have an ease?
House stand at ease. Is the body ready to vote on the question? Representative Berkowitz.
Madam Speaker, and I wanted to...
Excuse me, Representative Berkowitz, for the second time under debate. Please proceed.
I was rising to address the concern that this was new legal territory. It's not. There's been a series of what they call dram shop acts, which extend civil liability to bar owners, people who are operating lawfully. And it's my understanding that the original sponsor of the bill, as written initially, felt that it would be unfair to exclude illegal dealers of alcohol from civil liability, and the ground has been paved legally in that respect for legal dealers of alcohol to be held civilly liable, and we felt that it would be fair to make illegal dealers of alcohol and drugs civilly liable.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 22? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Clerk, please void the roll. We'll take the vote again. There can be no interruption or noise during a vote. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so committee substitute for House Bill 22 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on the passage of CS for HB 22 Judiciary be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. We will be breaking in 10 minutes to go into stand at ease for the state of the judiciary. I think we'll just go ahead and take an at ease now. And if in accordance with the provisions of Uniform Rule 51, I turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, the Honorable Mike Miller.
Joint session will come to order. The purpose of this joint session is to hear the State of the Judiciary address by the Honorable Alan Compton, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and that all members of the Senate be shown as present.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be shown as be waived and all members be shown as present.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. At this time, I'd like to appoint Representative Green and Senator Green to escort the Chief Justice to the joint session.
My father.
Not very green. Light is quick.
She says, my father.
Compton, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court.
is my pleasure today to introduce the Honorable Alan Compton, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. President Miller, Speaker Phillips, members of the 20th Alaska Legislature, representatives of the 4th Estate, and ladies and gentlemen, first I would like to introduce to you my colleagues who are here today. The newest appointee to the Alaska Supreme Court was appointed last month by Governor Tony Knowles. A former Supreme Court law clerk, Alaska District Court judge, United States attorney, one of the original appointees to the Alaska Court of Appeals when it was established in 1980, and through today, its only chief judge, Chief Judge Alexander Brenner. The newest member of the court, also only through today, the first woman appointed to the Alaska Supreme Court, Justice Dana Fabe. The next senior justice was raised here in Juneau. He attended Capitol Elementary School, which is only a stone's throw away from here. He probably did. He attended Juneau Douglas High School, Justice Robert Eastaugh. Next senior, a member of the Supreme Court since 1977, formerly in private practice in Anchorage, Justice Warren Matthews. Today, February 25th, marks the 70th birthday of the senior member of our court. He has served on this court for 32 years, including four terms as its Chief Justice. Before his appointment to this court, he served 5 years as a Superior Court judge in Fairbanks. His record of service to the judiciary of this state and through his judicial office to the people of this state is unsurpassed and, I suspect, unsurpassable. Today also marks the last day of his active service. Tomorrow, the first day of his retirement. Justice J. Rabinowitz. Also with us today is Arthur H. Snowden, Administrative Director of Courts, well known to you because of his work with the courts and on the court's behalf with the legislature for the last 24 years. As most of you know, this will be Mr. Snowden's last appearance as Administrative Director at a State of the Judiciary address. He is retiring this spring. He has provided the administrative leadership that has helped make the Alaska court system a model for state court management throughout this country. His vision, strength of purpose, and unselfish devotion to the institution are hallmarks by which he has become known and by which he will be known long into the future. Also with us is Stephanie Cole, who has been selected by us to succeed Arthur as Administrative Director of Courts. Each year, I receive copies of addresses given to state legislatures by the Chief Justices from throughout the country. And I skimmed through them trying to note some similarities between what is occurring in other states and what is occurring in Alaska. Once in a while, an observation is made by a Chief Justice in another state that I find is noteworthy, and I'd like to share with you now the following observation made last month by Chief Justice Ronald T.Y. Moon of the Hawaii Supreme Court. He made this to the Hawaii legislature. Standing before you today reminds me of speaking at a business conference several years ago. After my presentation, one of the organizers asked me whether it bothered me to see some of the attendees looking at their watches when I spoke. I said no, not until they started shaking them. I hope to avoid Chief Justice Moon's anguish. Before I talk about the judiciary, I would like to mention briefly two agencies which are part of the judicial branch of government. They are constitutionally created agencies. They operate independently of the courts. They are the Alaska Judicial Council, which I chair, and the Commission on Judicial Conduct. The Judicial Council has asked me to make a few remarks on its behalf, although its representatives, as well as the representatives of the Commission on Judicial Conduct, will be here to speak with you in the future. The Judicial Council nominates applicants for judgeships. The nominations are sent to the governor, who then appoints a nominee. The council evaluates all judges standing for retention election. It gives the voters extensive information about the judge's performance. At this time, Alaska is widely considered to have one of the finest judiciaries in this country. And a major reason for this is the exhaustive work done by the council each time it reviews applicants for a judicial position or looks at judicial performance before an election. The Constitution requires the Judicial Council to report periodically to you and to the Supreme Court with recommendations to improve the administration of justice. At the beginning of this session, the Council sent its 18th biennial report to the Supreme Court and to each of you, summarizing its work for the past 2 years. Last year, at your request, the Council has prepared a report on the use of DNA tests in criminal cases. You each received copies of that report at the beginning of this session. You also received copies of the Council's important findings about the Court's role in handling abused and neglected children's cases. The Council's staff presently assist the Court Committee on Fairness and Access. They participate in a number of other projects. Finally, the Council staff is working with the Appellate Courts, the Parole Board, and Community Corrections to create computerized case management systems to assist these agencies. These are statewide systems. I hope that you will give those agencies your fair consideration when they come and make their presentations to you. Since we met last year, a larger number of judges than usual have been appointed to the bench. Ben Esch was appointed to the Nome Superior Court to fill a vacancy created by the retirement of Judge Charles Tunley. Eric Sanders was appointed to the Anchorage Superior Court to fill a vacancy created by Justice Fave's appointment to the Supreme Court. Recently, Dan Hensley, Sen Tan, and Anchorage District Court Judge Michael Wilberton were appointed to the Anchorage Superior Court to fill vacancies created by the retirements of Judges Mark Rowland, Carl Johnstone, and Joan Woodward. The Valdez Superior Court vacancy was administratively transferred to Palmer because of Palmer's critical caseload. It was filled by the appointment of Eric Smith in Palmer. William Bonner is presently the acting District Court Judge in Valdez, where a vacant District Court judgeship is being advertised. Finally, Fred Teresi was appointed to the Dillingham Superior Court, a new Superior Court judgeship created by the last legislature. These vacancies created by these many retirements have left courts in the 3rd Judicial District without necessary judicial resources. To compensate for the temporary loss of judicial resources, District Court judges in Anchorage have served as Superior Court judges pro tem. Acting district judges were hired in their place to assist in the district courts. While there has been some disruption, the presiding judge and area court administrator for the 3rd Judicial District and those who work with them, whether judicial officers or administrative staff, have done a magnificent job in minimizing any inconvenience to litigants and the public which our courts serve. Adding to this sense of displacement that many in the Anchorage court system, in May, the Anchorage trial courts moved to the Nesbitt Courthouse, located east across I Street from the existing Boney Building. In October, administrative staff moved from 4 different locations into the newly renovated building located directly south across 4th Avenue from the Nesbitt Courthouse, the former Anchorage Times Building. This administrative office building is the final addition to the Anchorage Judicial Complex. The proximity of the Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, trial courts, and administrative offices have resulted in efficiencies and operations not possible in the past. We now have conference facilities that will accommodate statewide meetings of judges, clerks, and magistrates. On-site warehouse space obviates the need to lease a storage and archival facility. Additional remodeling work remains to be done in the Boney Building, but after years of overcrowded conditions in Anchorage, the Alaska court system now has adequate space there to house all its necessary functions. It is common that laws enacted by the Alaska State Legislature become the framework within which the judiciary works. An example, and just one example, of this symbiotic relationship is the passage of the Domestic Violence Protection and Victim Protection Act of 1996. This act substantially changed many aspects of both civil and criminal law in Alaska. Initially, the court system responded to these changes by providing extensive training for judges, magistrates, and clerks, an effort made possible in large part by federal funding through the state's Violence Against Women Act Committee. In addition, we have produced comprehensive written training materials for judicial officers and offices. We have modified forms used by victims of domestic violence when seeking assistance, and on which judicial officers document the issuance of protective orders. The significance of the changes brought about by the law cannot be minimized, nor can the difficulties we face be ignored. For us, we have to respond, just as do you when you perceive a need for new or additional legislation. The judiciary is just now beginning to see the impact of the new domestic violence law on our caseloads and on the amount of time our judicial officers dedicate to the handling of those cases. In the first 6 months since the new domestic violence law became effective, we had a nearly 18% increase in the number of domestic violence civil protective order filings. Our judges tell me that the amount of time each individual case takes is generally double what it took under the pre-July 1996 law. The time increase is a result of the additional mandatory hearings now required, the increased number of issues being considered by judges, the increased number of cases being contested, and the increased number of attorneys involved in these proceedings. We have not been able to calculate the increase in the number of criminal cases resulting from the mandatory arrest provisions of the new law, but every indication is that our criminal caseload has been affected as well. As both state and federal laws increasingly emphasize the need for a comprehensive response to the problem of domestic violence in our society, the Alaska judiciary will continue to make every effort to comply with the changes in the law and to cooperate with the executive and legislative branches of government to maximize efforts to respond to the problems these changes address. I encourage you to recognize that such efforts by the judiciary and the executive branch as well require adequate funding as well as adequate time to prepare for the changes. I ask you to make a careful assessment of the true cost of changes, such as the creation of a mandatory registry for domestic violence protective orders, and the time it takes for the executive branch to implement such a registry, and a careful assessment of the broadening of the issues which each judicial officer must consider before granting a protective order. It takes money to implement new laws. It takes time to make the necessary adjustments to effectuate them. Domestic violence is but one of the many areas in which many areas of change which impact the judiciary in a similar way. On behalf of the judiciary, I want you to know that we appreciate the difficult job you face in making and funding new laws. We want to work cooperatively in a partnership with you and with the executive to assure that the effectiveness of all our efforts in these areas is as best it can be. In large part, the court measures its workload and its resource needs and allocations by assessing the levels of caseloads and the changes that occur in caseloads over time. In this last fiscal year, one of the most dramatic changes we have observed was a 16% increase in felony filings statewide, with seven courts reporting a greater than 20% increase in felony filings. Within these statewide felony filings, the largest statistical grouping was violent crime. Also of interest is the recent growth of children's proceedings caseload. Between fiscal year 1993 and fiscal year 1996, we have seen a 26% increase in children's filings in Superior Court. Over the same period of time, our largest court in Anchorage experienced a 65% increase in children's filings. Case filings help us predict workload, but case filings do not always reflect the level of activity at a court location, because they do not include post-judgment proceedings, for instance. In recent years, trial judges have seen an increase in post-judgment activity, particularly in petitions to revoke probation, motions to modify child support, and motions to modify child custody. These proceedings can be as time-consuming and complicated as the original action. Caseload statistics also do not reflect the increased number of pro se litigants. Nationwide, state and federal courts have seen a huge increase in the number of citizens who represent themselves in court, shunning the assistance of a lawyer. These litigants place a disproportionate stress on the court system because they generally are less knowledgeable and skillful about access to the justice system, and they require more assistance from judges and court staff. The Alaska Supreme Court currently has 10 standing advisory committees on rules and court procedure. Last year, 115 individuals served on these committees. The committees studied and made recommendations to the Supreme Court on a range of issues, including management of grand juries, expanded use of telephonic appearances in criminal proceedings, simplification of felony sentencing procedures, mandatory disclosure of information in divorce actions, alternative dispute resolution, standards for home study investigations in adoptions, improved case management in children in need of aid cases, and implementation of the new domestic violence law. Without these committees, we would truly be lost. The Alaska Constitution guarantees persons charged with crimes the right to assistance of counsel for the defense, as does the United States Constitution. These constitutional provisions require that counsel be appointed for indigent defendants at public expense. Alaska's Public Defender Act defines who qualifies as an indigent person for this purpose. Early last year, it came to our attention that the criteria used to decide whether to appoint counsel for indigent persons varies substantially among and even within judicial districts. Last April, with the Supreme Court's approval, I appointed a committee to recommend standards to be used by judges in determining a person's eligibility for appointed counsel. This committee, which currently consists of four judges, one magistrate, and two pretrial services clerks, has been working on this project since last May. The committee expects soon to forward its recommendations to the Supreme Court, and ultimately, we know that those recommendations will be shared with you. State and federal courts in Alaska established a joint gender equality task force in 1993. They renewed their commitment to the goals of this group last year. The task force has demonstrated that the state and federal courts can cooperate successfully on an important venture that serves citizens throughout the state. Members of the task force completed and published their final report last year, recommending education for court personnel and judges, as well as for lawyers. They also suggested state and federal court rules and a state ethics rule for attorneys prohibiting gender discrimination. The task force has begun to update the Women's Legal Rights Handbook, a state publication last revised in the 1980s. Other state agencies, nonprofits, and the private bar are cooperating with the task force, which is funded primarily by donations from the Anchorage Bar Association members and private individuals. The task force will continue to assess the progress that state and federal courts are making toward providing gender fairness for all persons in all courts. In late 1995, the Supreme Court established a special committee called the Committee on Fairness and Access to investigate issues of concern to minority ethnic and cultural groups throughout the state. Although the courts can take pride in the fact that sentencing patterns have not shown ethnically related disparities for nearly 20 years, we believe that it was time to take a broader look at people's access to the justice system. The committee has sought the help of ethnic groups across the state, has scheduled public hearings, and is compiling extensive information about six major areas of concern that the members have identified. These include the court's role as an employer, selection of juries, access to the courts in rural areas of the state, possible disparities in the incarceration of adults and juveniles, the experiences of ethnic and cultural persons who come into the courts as parties or witnesses, and language and cultural barriers that may exist. Because we are in the middle of collecting data about these issues, I cannot give you as complete a picture of the committee's findings as I'd like. It is worth noting that the state's population appears to be diverse in many ways we had not expected. For example, magistrates in smaller communities from Ketchikan to Barrow say that periodically they need Spanish interpreters in their courts. Many have needed Filipino translators, and some needed Russian or Korean and other Asian languages. In the predominantly Yupik and Inupiat communities, the courts find a strong need for bridging cultural as well as linguistic gaps in understanding. We will need to work with other state agencies, private organizations, and community-based interest groups to begin to meet these needs once we have the committee's recommendations in hand. For those of you who are interested, we would invite you to attend the committee's Juneau public hearing set for March 26th at the courthouse from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and to contact us if you or any of your constituents have issues that the committee should consider. In January of this year, I appointed a new Supreme Court committee to investigate and recommend ways in which Alaska courts can better handle child in need of aid proceedings. A nationwide effort to ensure that children do not linger in foster care, the court has asked the Alaska Judicial Council to study the way in which child in need of aid cases are handled in Alaska. In October, the council issued a comprehensive report indicating a number of areas in which improvements and further studies were warranted. The new Child in Need of Aid Committee, chaired by Sitka Superior Court Judge Larry Zervos, will continue the efforts begun by the Judicial Council and will help the court move toward implementation of needed changes in our system. The court's work is being supported in part by a 4-year federal grant, which is available to all states for work in this area. I want to stress that service on one of these committees, whether a standing committee or a special committee, is not simply another line to be put on a resume or in a law directory. Committee work is done by dedicated volunteers who put in many thankless hours in the performance of their tasks. They receive no pay for what they do, and indeed often must step away from their desks to perform volunteer service. They serve not simply the bench or the Alaska court system, but you and the people of the state of Alaska as well. Their impact on the judiciary is quite significant, yet their profile low. They richly deserve our thanks. I will briefly mention two legislative proposals we have asked the House and Senate Judiciary Committees to introduce. One will transfer the issue of marriage licenses from the court system to the Bureau of Vital Statistics. Currently, the Bureau creates the marriage license form and is a custodian of the marriage license records. The Bureau agrees with the court system that it will be more efficient for the Bureau to manage the distribution and issuance of marriage licenses, benefiting the public by providing one location rather than two for applications, licenses, and recording. The second bill addresses a problem that is of increasing concern to public officials nationwide. There is a developing problem of so-called patriotic groups recording false liens against the property of public officials and others who do not share their political views. A false lien can tie up private property for years and cost the state substantial attorney time in attempting to clear title to the property. The proposed legislation will make it a misdemeanor to record a false lien and simplify the process for removing one. I'm going to mention only one item on our budget because it is unusual. We have requested $1,400,000 to provide funding for 22 additional Department of Public Safety court security officers. As you are aware, Title 22, Article 3 of the Alaska Statutes provides that the Commissioner of Public Safety is responsible for providing a variety of services to the courts, including services to maintain order. This past summer, due to an incident that occurred in the Superior Court in Fairbanks, I had discussions with the court security officers in Fairbanks, and that led to an acknowledgement that we were both concerned about the inadequate security that is being provided in a court environment. We ask the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety to investigate and report to us what additional resources would be necessary to provide adequate security services to courts statewide. The funding request you see in our budget reflects the assessment provided to us by the Department of Public Safety, an assessment which it considers to be the minimum necessary to provide adequate service. Because the report came too late to get to the executive budget, we have put it in our budget with the understanding that funding appropriated for this purpose should most appropriately be channeled to the Department of Public Safety. I urge you to take this request very seriously. We must provide a safe and secure environment for members of the public, litigants, witnesses, and court staff. Nationally, we have seen a dramatic increase in violent incidents in court environments, often with tragic results. We have the opportunity to take steps to avoid that type of devastating effect in our own state, and we owe it to the people of the state to provide them with a court environment which is free from the very real threat of violence. To do otherwise is to be penny wise and pound foolish. It is our view that the state of Alaska's judiciary is sound. Nonetheless, as the branch of government without a political constituency, and quite rightly so, it is fragile. It depends upon the legislature's and executive's willingness to maintain it as the strong, independent branch of government intended by the drafters of our Constitution. We stand ready, willing, and able to cooperate with the legislature and the executive in those areas where cooperation will not compromise the independence so necessary to the judiciary in our system of checks and balances. The judiciary does not exist and function in a vacuum. It is part and parcel of all the men and women who work for the Alaska court system, whether they be judicial officers or administrative personnel, and of the many who are not court system employees but volunteers who work tirelessly to improve the services we provide to the people of the state of Alaska. To these people, I say thank you for a job well done. It has been an honor to appear before you today. I thank you for your time. Thank you for your support.
I move the joint session adjourned.
Without objection, joint session is adjourned.
Would the House please come back to order? Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 35 by Representative Osterman, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program and Providing for an Effective Date. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered the bill attached to fiscal note recommending due pass Jewel, Ogun, Sanders, Kukesh, Ryan, and Ivan. The report was signed by Ivan, Chair. The Finance Committee has considered the bill recommending due pass Mulder, Grusendorf, Kelly, and Foster. No recommendation, Terrio, Coring, Davies, and Davis. Amend, Hanley, and Martin. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley. Co-chairs, I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the HB 35 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. The clerk please read the title for the third and final time.
House Bill 35 by Representative Osterman entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program and Providing for an Effective Date.
Under debate, Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In 1988, the Alaska Regional Development Organization Program was created in statute. These are commonly known as the ARDRs. They are private nonprofit corporations formed by local initiatives to promote private sector economic development within their designated region. Since 1988, there have been 11 of these ARDR programs developed. There's the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, the Arctic Development Corporation, the Copper Valley Economic Development Corporation, the Kenai Peninsula Borough Economic Development District, Lower Kuskokwim Economic, Lower Yukon Economic, the Mat-Su Resource Conservation Development Incorporation, the Northwest Arctic Borough Economic Development Commission, Prince William Sound Economic, Southeast Conference, and the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. This is a very simple bill. All it does is it extends the sunset date of 1997 to the year 2000 so that these economic development ARDRs can continue to function.
Further debate? Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt House Bill 35? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
36 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Bill 35 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on HB 35 be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Representative Barnes.
Under introduction of guests, please.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, in the Taylor Gallery, would the members of the body please help me welcome four constituents of mine, David Earle, and I think it is Pilar Humphreys, Peggy Morin, and Robert Tubbs. Would you stand, please?
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Under introduction of guests, we have in both galleries a number of young people down to Juneau for the Youth Congress on the Underage Access to Alcohol. If they would please stand when I give their name, and we will ask them all to be recognized at one time. We have Audrey Callum from Petersburg, Jessica Gardner from King Salmon, Dennis Plants from Sitka, Rob Case from Sitka, Aisha Townsend from Anchorage, Crystal Kalmakoff from Chignik Lake, Jesse Shargan from Chignik Lake, Thomas Watts from Fairbanks, Darren Jones from Ambler, Martin Paddock from Pelican, Daniel Willems from Pelican, J.R. Bernaldo from Juneau, Serena Searle from Craig, Jeff Lund from Kowak, Sarah Murphy from Wrangell, Carrie Thrush from Wrangell, Jacob Barrett from Ketchikan, Tina Hamilton from Chagluk, Tina Abbott from Hollis, Summers Cole from Juneau, and Beth Fitzgerald from Juneau. They're accompanied by their chaperones and advisors, Rex Garber, Sheena Bergmeyer, Karen Martinson, and Denise Weimiller.
Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's not often that I get a guest down from my home district, but today I have the pleasure of introducing not only one, but four that are in the Taylor Gallery. We have Harold Engel, Tom Novotny, Don Patience, and Fred Johnson. I believe they're down with the ARCO CAP program. Please help me welcome them to Juneau.
Representative Ryan.
Yes, Madam Speaker. Under introduction of guests, I'd like the body to help me to welcome two constituents I have in the Taylor Gallery, Ken Jones and Kerry Kirkland.
Further introduction of guests, Representative Hodgins.
Yes, if the gallery could help me welcome Deborah Mullins, who is on the Kenai Peninsula School Board, and she is in the Taylor Gallery.
Further guests? This brings us down the calendar to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader?
Oh, the next item on today's calendar.
There are citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader?
There certainly are, and Madam Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Under unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Barnes be excused from a call to the House for the following time from 1:22 p.m. plain time Thursday, February 27th until 9:35 plain time Monday, March 3rd, and that Representative Hodgins' previously excused time of 9:35 a.m. plain time Tuesday, March 4th be amended to 9:35 a.m. plain time Wednesday, March 5th.
Without objection, those members will be shown as excused. Further unfinished business? Committee announcements? Representative Ivan.
The House CRA committee will meet February 26th at 8 a.m. to address Senate Bill 29, State, 18 Municipalities, and Unorganized Boroughs. Thank you.
Further committee announcements? General announcements? I'll stand briefly at ease. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I would like to re-announce that there will be a majority caucus at noon in the Speaker's meeting room.
Further announcements? Special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would request permission of the body to speak on taking it on the chin.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to take the opportunity to advise the body and offer a recognition for an individual that I think performed above and beyond the call. We had a testimony yesterday in the House Judiciary on HB 58, a bill that has a subject that has been around the legislature for a few years and has drawn some spirited testimony in the past, but This activity yesterday apparently went further than we had seen before. One individual, an Anchorage LIO, testified against the bill and then proceeded to remain in the hall. And by reports, kibitzed and made disparaging remarks to people who would testify, and there were several testifying in favor of HB 58. At the conclusion of the meeting, one of those individuals, I won't mention his name, but his initials are Frank Dillon, happened to confront the individual that had been making remarks, inquired about them, and was popped on the chin for his inquiry. I'm happy to announce that he returned the pop, and we want to just recognize him for that stalwart support of HB 58, and we hope that he doesn't have to experience that kind of recognition again.
Further special orders, Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I too would like to rise and ask the body's indulgence to talk about educational examples.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Madam Speaker, most of us are aware, certainly those of us in the Judiciary Committee are aware, that the bill before us for the last 2 days and will be again with us tomorrow is a rather controversial, certainly a rather difficult bill. It encompasses a considerable latitude of issues called torts. And it just seems to me, Madam Speaker, that one of our listening audience participants went beyond the call of duty when he actually showed us by his interjection of his chin on the end of another person's fist that this indeed was a tort action and he returned same in kind. And I think it deserves recognition.
Further special orders. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 26th.
We're adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow.